Hey, that music must mean it's time for the Brad Sessmatch Show on a Friday. And greetings to all of you. Good morning, class. I'm Jeff Munn from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Look at the shirt. See? You can tell I'm with the Diamondbacks. And for those of you listening on radio, that meant nothing to you. But we're glad to be here this today on a Friday with a lot going on in the world of sports and people to talk to about it. So we hope you'll stay with us for the balance of this program on sports360az.com, azcentral.com. Hi to all of you up in the North Country. And boy, wouldn't you like to be up there today with the kind of weather I'm sure they're having. And we'll talk more about that in a minute, strangely enough. We have among our guests today Scott Bordeaux of AZ Central, the Arizona Republic, AZ Central sports columnist, wrote a piece today about Kirk Gibson, and I just want to have him come on and kind of go into further detail about his thoughts about the D-backs manager. And we'll also get into some discussion with him about one of our favorite topics he and I talk about all the time, and that's college sports, in particular ASU and the Pac-12. Bill Gutekunst drops by for his usual Friday visit. We'll talk movies, and I'm going to – now, look, Father's Day was last Friday, but I'm going to try to get him – try. It's my show. He will do it. We're going to get into a discussion about TV dads, and I don't mean, you know, Cliff Huxtable or Al Bundy or current TV dads. I'm talking about the classics and why, for some reason, last weekend with Father's Day, they never got mentioned. But we'll also get the latest on the movies. He's going to give us his thoughts on Jersey Boys, which is another film. It's funny. We'll save it for when Bill's here. It's a Clint Eastwood film. I just never would have associated Clint Eastwood with a bunch of guys singing. I mean, if you heard him sing in Paint Your Wagon, you'd know why you shouldn't associate Clint Eastwood with singing. In any event, lots to get to on this Friday, so let's get right to it. The stories of the day and today's top sports stories are brought to you by the Honda Resort and Casino. I hear a slot machine in the distance. It's located in the beautiful White Mountains just outside of Pine Top in eastern Arizona. Head up now and enjoy their beautiful cooler weather. I said cooler, and I meant it. That's the Honda Resort and Casino. D-backs lost yesterday to the Brewers 4-1. Another strong outing. I mean, when you just look at the overall numbers for Chase Anderson, but the D-backs, with a number of mistakes, a couple in the field, a little bit on the base paths, Kirk Gibson said, yeah, his team made mistakes. The Brewers made them pay.
There wasn't a lot of opportunities out there for us, and when we had the opportunities, we didn't make good on them. On the other hand, you know, I think they're like 4 or 5 for 10 with runners in scoring position against us. They had more pressure on us. We made two mistakes in the field, changed the game a little bit, but we've been pretty good at those this year, but today not so.
Now the D-backs will host the Giants starting tonight, 3-game series at Chase Field. The Giants are falling all over themselves. A 9.5-game lead on the Dodgers has suddenly shrunk to 4. And there's more to this than just the Giants' struggles. There was an interesting backstory to Clayton Kershaw's no-hitter, and we'll get into it. We've got some open time later on in the show. But I think I am seeing things out of the Dodgers that tell me that we might be seeing a repeat of last year, where they're going to have a huge mid to late June surge past the Giants. And I had picked the Giants at the beginning of the year in the National League West. So I'm not – this is – it's a little tough for me to say this, but right now I look at the Giants, and I haven't done all my prep work for tonight, but it's – from what I read on a day-to-day basis, a lot of it centers on the pitching. Matt Cain has really struggled. Now, Tim Lincecum will pitch tonight, and Lincecum has been, for the most part – he's not back to the Tim Lincecum he was 2, 3 years ago, 4 years ago. But to me, he's become a very effective 6-7-inning pitcher who every once in a while can get you a little deeper than that in a game. He'll start tonight against Josh Kolmenner, and yes, Paul Goldschmidt will make certain Tim Lincecum gets to the ballpark, probably send a limo to the hotel. The USA men's soccer team in the World Cup. This is what – I'll get to this in a minute, but they face Portugal on Sunday in their second game. Tim Howard, USA, well, it says here, Jared Cohen is filling in today for Eric Sorensen. I don't know a great deal about soccer, but one thing that I do know, and this comes from the fact that my son was started in goal at Marcos Denisa High School last year, they like to be called keepers. They don't like to be called goalies.
Oh, see, and therein lies my issues with trying to be a sports media person while the World Cup is going on that knows very little about soccer. So I do
I know
that the
either.
Field is called the pitch. Okay,
yeah, I know. That,
don't get
yeah,
that
I've heard
twisted.
That too. I'll tell you a little
someone
story.
Someone will eat you alive if you call the field the pitch.
Yeah.
Or if you don't call,
if you
the
don't
field
call
the pitch.
It a pitch. In any event, Tim Howard says there will be quite a challenge facing Portugal's Ronaldo this Sunday.
The incredible thing about Ronaldo is everything you see on television. You know, he does that every day in training. He's that gifted of a player. So hopefully he won't have too many tricks up his sleeve on Sunday, but we'll see.
Now, here's what I was going to tell you about soccer. And first of all, I will be very curious to see what kind of ratings they get Sunday. I think the game begins at 3 o'clock Arizona time. I'm not terribly sure. I'm going to be busy at that time, so it's like, you know. One thing I will tell you, and it's true about most of the sports that I don't know a lot about. I've always said I'm not big into NASCAR, but I have a great deal of respect for NASCAR fans because they really get it. They get it, and I don't, and I respect the fact that they do. And as a result, I respect the sport, even though I don't really understand all the strategy involved with it. Same thing for soccer. When I used to go to Marcos Denisa games, and my son played on the JV for a year, then moved up to varsity, there was a guy, and he was a parent, but he knew the game forwards and backwards, and he would sit in the stands and just dissect out loud, yelling at the field, mostly at the referees, everything that was going on. And I started thinking to myself, this guy must have swallowed a soccer encyclopedia because he just knew so much about the game. But you're right. It's the pitch. There's other little terms. I'll tell you something else, and maybe we'll get into this in our open segment. It's really interesting to see the way the country has, and it's not just for the U.S. games. There's a lot of interest in games in general in this World Cup here in the United States, and it's been very interesting to see the way the interest in soccer has grown. And there's a couple of reasons for it, I think, and we'll get into it later on. Suns have a draft workout today, and I'm going to admit my age and say that my mind has already gone blank. So Jared Cohen filling in for Eric Sorensen, get in here and remind me who is this has got to be one of their last draft workouts because the draft is Thursday.
Yeah, and they haven't had any all this week, which I thought maybe they were done. I was thinking about it yesterday. I was like, man, they haven't had a workout in a while. But they have a couple interesting prospects coming in. Cleanthony Early out of Wichita State. That Wichita State Shocker team that had a great season. He was one of their leading players, a really freak athlete at the small forward position. He's a first-round talent. And then Tyler Enos, the point guard out of Syracuse that had some of those big shots and a really talented point guard. He's also first-round talent. He's in. And then Louisville's Russ Smith, who won national championship with Louisville, he's in for the second time during these workouts.
Now, a couple other things related to this. Joel Embiid, did I say that name right?
I think he goes by Joel.
Joel Embiid,
yes.
Out of Kansas, fractures his foot. And I always remember something that late Cotton Fitzsimmons said. You always have to be a little leery of big guys who have foot problems.
Exactly.
And so his foot injury now, I think now the real intrigue to this draft, it's twofold. Most of the draft projections had the Cavaliers using the number one overall pick on Embiid. Now the question is twofold. I don't think they're going to do it. And how far does he drop?
It's interesting you bring that up. There was a mock draft released this morning on NBA.com. Mm-hmm. I can't remember the writer. It's escaping me right now. But reacted to Embiid's injury and in his mock draft drop all the way to 6 to the Celtics. And Jabari Parker jumps Anthony Wiggins going from the third pick to the first pick going to the Cavaliers. So that's all of a sudden a foot injury costs a guy the first overall pick and goes all the way down to 6.
When you've got a player that can be dominant at 7 feet, that's going to get your attention. But I look at that situation and I think, is it possible, and I think it is, that he could drop even further? Because, again, there's a lot of guys in this league that remember Sam Bowie, you know?
Exactly.
And we don't have to go into the whole story, but it's essentially a situation where if you invest that high a pick in a guy and he doesn't play for you, you suffer for that for a long time. And it's and I say Sam Bowie not just because the Trailblazers passed up on Michael Jordan to draft Bowie. It's just the fact that they never got – think of Bill Walton. Bill Walton never achieved the pro career he should have because of foot problems. The Trailblazers got that one terrific year out of him in 77 when they won the world championship. But a couple of years after that, he's down in San Diego with the Clippers, and he never really played that much. He did come back and had a few years as a role player with the Celtics. But so, come on, I mean, if coming out of college – you would have thought this guy would be up there with Kareem, Shaq, all the great centers in NBA history. And in as much as people love Bill Walton, and I am intrigued by his TV work, I'm not going to say I love it, but I'm intrigued by it.
You either love it or you hate it.
I like how you're intrigued. He did not accomplish everything he could have as a pro because of the foot injuries.
Another great example of that that's a little bit more recent to draw upon is Greg Oden.
Yes.
How Greg Oden was taken number one overall and Kevin Durant was number two. And same situation, dealt with foot problems and hand problems. And he self-proclaimed himself as being a bust in a recent article during this this past season. Durant is the history. You look at guys like Andrew Wiggins and Jabari Parker have the star quality, except you go on a flyer on a potential 7-footer with foot problems, it has Greg Oden written all over it. That's actually what we talked about a little bit yesterday when Mark Asher was filling in, is that it has a lot of Greg Oden written on the wall for us.
Well, and keep this in mind, too. You mentioned the Celtics as a possible destination. Danny Ainge spent a little time with Cotton Fitzsimmons here in Phoenix, and I'm sure at some point Cotton used that phrase to him, big men with foot injuries, you got to watch out for them. God bless Cotton, and I love Cotton, and I know he's looking down on us and smiling and miss him terribly, but he was absolutely right. And I think that it, one of the things, all of a sudden now, the NBA draft, which kind of went on a roller coaster. A year ago, people were just like, oh, I can't wait for next year's draft because all these great players. And somewhere during the middle of the college season, it kind of went, ee. Now it's starting to ramp up again in terms of interest. Be very interesting. Scott Bordeaux will join us in the next segment. Wrote a column today about why the D-backs should hang in there with Kirk Gibson. And I want to get him to expound on that a little bit. And then we're going to talk about college athletics. Have you noticed we've gone through the entire college year and in championship games? No Pac-12. Is that an issue? Is that a concern? We'll find out from Scott coming up on the Brad Sesmatt Show on a Friday. Hope you have a nice weekend planned and stick with us, won't you?
For original, in-depth Arizona sports news you care about, follow us on Twitter at Sports360AZ.
Friday on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Jeff Munn for Brad. Good to have you with us. Sports360AZ.com. Great place to visit on your computer, of course, when you want the latest in local sports news, opinions, all kinds of stuff. Speaking of sports news and opinions, we can always count on both from our next guest, Scott Bordeaux of AZCentral.com. We're actually, he and I are going to have a conversation that's actually going to be heard by other people, which, I guess when you and I talk before Kirk Gibson's media session each day, some people listen in on it, but we have a larger audience today.
I think people wonder, why do they keep talking about ASU baseball? These aren't you guys talking about this sport.
Well, listen, we'll get to that in a second. I want to talk some college sports with you, too, and I know that, and for those who are not aware, Scott centralizes himself most of the time on high school sports, but he also does a variety of other things, and including covering the Diamondbacks. You wrote a column today talking about why Kirk Gibson should stay on board as the D-backs manager. Now, I'm not, obviously in my position, I'm not going to get into a lot of opinions or things of that nature, but I want you to just take a moment and give some greater detail on your position and why you think things should just stay as is for now.
Well, for a couple reasons. I think, let's go back to February, Jeff. I think when this whole team was assembled the first day of spring training, I don't think anybody reasonably thought this was a pennant-contending team. I think most people thought this was probably, at best, another 500 ball club, just like they've been the last couple of years. There have been a lot of talk about the trade they made in the offseason, the moves they had made, Trumbo and trading away Skaggs and and the Reed deal, but I don't think anybody thought this was the team that was going to challenge the Dodgers or the Giants in the NL West. So start with that premise. This wasn't probably, in my mind at least, what was considered a really good baseball team. Since then, you've been just besieged by injuries. You have lost your number one starter just before the season, Patrick Corbin. Your setup man in David Hernandez. Since the season began, two-thirds of your starting outfield in Mark Trumbo and A.J. Pollock, and just recently Bronson Arroyo. Add to that, Trevor Cahill pitching so bad he got sent down. Brandon McCarthy winning one game. Put all those things together, and I'll admit, they got off to a horrendous start in April, 8-22 in April, which was their, you know, one of their worst months in history. Since then, they've played essentially 500 ball. I think they're one game under 500 since May 1st. Despite all those injuries, despite being given what I call a flawed roster by general manager Kevin Towers, given that fact they've played 500 ball the last 7 weeks with this roster, I'm not sure what the justification would be for firing Kirk Gibson.
I'm curious to know, and you, when you cover games, obviously you get a chance to talk to other baseball media people. Tony La Russa has been on the job now with the D-backs for about a month. What has been the view of people who cover maybe other teams or national baseball people that you talk to about where things stand structurally with the D-backs now with Tony La Russa on board?
I think mostly they're just as curious as we are as what's going to happen, Jeff, because Tony really has been the mystery man since he took over. I mean, he did several press conferences and interviews when he first took over, but since then he spent a lot of time on the road, going to the Diamondbacks minor league affiliates, talking to people. He's been at Chase Field the last couple of days, talking to, you know, Derek Hall, Staton, Kevin Towers, GM Sweet during the games. But I think everybody is waiting just to see what Tony La Russa will do. I think everybody obviously respects who he is in baseball and what he's done. I think everybody, though, is curious. Is he going to make major changes? Is he going to kind of just let this go for a while and maybe build in the offseason? I think there's just more of a curiosity factor than anything else.
The thing that, and people ask me the same thing, Scott, and we're talking to Scott Bordeaux of azcentral.com. It's just my opinion, if you're going to make major changes, you can't do them right away for a couple of reasons. He has to have the time to get in and see what he's got
right.
In an organization, not just on the playing rosters, but in the dugout in terms of who's running these teams and obviously his structure baseball operations-wise in his own front office. And I that isn't something you do in 2 weeks. I think it's something that you do kind of run through the course of the season, and then you sit down and you start making some decisions.
Well, right. See, you know, a guy like Tony La Russa can't react emotionally like fans are reacting. The team stinks, so fans want change right now. Let's change everything. We need to change. We stink. Something's got to be done. Fire the manager. You know, all the things you hear. Tony La Russa can't react that way. He's got to have a bigger picture than that. And so it doesn't make any sense immediately come and changes. He's got to see how Kirk Gibson manages. He needs to talk to Kevin Towers about why Kevin Towers made some of his decisions. The smart thing to do is take time, evaluate the organization, talk to a lot of people, and then formulate some opinions. I do think there's one date to keep in mind. The trading deadline is July 31st. If Tony La Russa, after looking at this organization, is convinced that general manager Kevin Towers, he doesn't like the deals Towers has made for whatever reason, I think that's by that day you could see some change, only because I'm not sure he'd want Ben Towers making whatever deals the Diamondbacks might make before that day. Now, if he decides that he's a guy that he believes in Kevin Towers and Kevin Towers is going to be his GM, then you might not see anything done, if at all. But I do think if he's going to make a change in terms of the GM, that's a date to keep in mind, just because he may be the one, or he may want to bring in somebody else to kind of maneuver the trades.
Scott Bordeaux of azcentral.com joining us here on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Jeff Munn for Brad on a Friday. All right, let's change gears now into something you and I debate all the time. Not so much the ASU baseball thing. We could, but I was thinking about this today. Back in January, the BCS National Championship game at the Rose Bowl was Florida State against Auburn.
Right.
The Final Four, the championship game, was Kentucky against UConn. And we're down to four teams at the College World Series: Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, Texas, and I'm blanking, Virginia. No Pac-12 teams. Just a one-year blip on the radar screen, or has the Conference of Champions got something to worry about?
Oh, I think it's just a one-year blip in the radar screen. I mean, Oregon's been so close in football. I mean, in baseball, how many titles has Oregon State, Oregon, or UCLA won recently? I just think it's a one-year blip. I think this is a very strong conference. In a lot of ways, that is getting stronger when you consider the TV contract they recently signed. When you consider all the upgraded facilities that are going on, you know, look at what U of A has done with their football plant. Look what ASU is doing with Sun Devil Stadium. I mean, look what Oregon does constantly. UCLA just did with Pauley. I just think it's a one-year blip. I don't know if, you know, I'm not saying the Pac-12 is going to win a title every year in the major sports, but they'll be in contention. There's no question.
Okay, let me just run a couple things by you. First of all,
I will say this, though, Jeff. All those schools you named, do you see one commonality among all those schools?
They're all in the South.
No, not just that.
Except for UConn.
Not one of them is a pro market. Am I correct?
Yeah.
And I look back, I'm trying to think of all the schools you mentioned. Are any of them in what you would consider to be a predominantly pro market?
No, not even UConn. And UConn could, I guess, claim Boston or New York, but
yeah,
you really don't.
Not in Storrs, Connecticut.
Yeah,
no,
not in Storrs, Connecticut. And
right.
You're right. And I think that's a big part of it, too. And that could also explain a lot of why Oregon has become so that and the Nike money. But they're in an area. They're 120 miles south of Portland. So there's not a lot of connection with pro sports there. Well, let me touch on a couple of things with you regarding the Pac-12. One, the decision made at the meetings recently to open an 11 a.m. TV window Pacific time. I guess it would be noon in the Mountain Time Zone.
Right.
To get football games on television. And I think, well, gee, that's terrific, and that's all well and good. But if they don't get this thing with DirecTV solved, it's not going to matter if they play at 11 a.m., 3 in the morning, because half the country won't be able to see it anyway.
Well, I guess it would depend on what network those games are on, right? I mean, what station are those games going to be? We don't know
what
games are going to be
on.
Yeah,
that's a good question.
If those games are on TBS, or, I don't know, if some station you can get with basic cable, I don't know. But I think it's a good idea. You're right. I will agree with you. They need to get that solved, and maybe the AT&T purchase of DirecTV will clear the way for that. But I think it's a good idea only because so many people in the East Coast, including writers and everybody else, don't see so many Pac-12 games because they're late at night. If you want your conference to get more national exposure, if you want more recruits from the East Coast to see your games and see the UCLA campus, see the ASU campus, see how beautiful it is, Strawberry Canyon, you need to have more games during the day when people are up in the East Coast. So I think it's a brilliant idea.
The other thing that came up this week, and I actually think it was discussed last week by Ray Anderson, and Herb Sendek talked about it a little bit this week, is you're starting to hear a lot of chatter about they got to do something about Wells Fargo Arena at ASU. And I agree, the building, and for people who don't know, weren't here at the time, when that building was built in 1974, opened in 1974, there was just the Suns. And
right.
Fred Miller, the AD at the time, seized upon an opportunity to put ASU basketball at a different level by moving them out of Sun Devil Gym into a building that actually had more seats than the Coliseum where the Suns played and was a nicer building at the time.
Yeah.
Where we're at today is, there's no question, if you look at some of the buildings on the West Coast, Gonzaga's arena, USC's new building, the Galen Center, which seats about 10,000, they need to do something. But my question, Scott, when I read Ray Anderson's comments were are they going to come up with the money?
Well, that's the problem. I mean, look, they don't have Phil Knight. They don't have T. Boone Pickens. They don't have this one guy who can just say, here's $140 million, go build yourself a new basketball facility or do whatever you need to Wells Fargo to make it work. They don't have that guy or that woman. And so it's difficult because they're spending so much money already and trying to raise funds to rebuild Sun Devil Stadium and going through that whole fundraising effort that where do they get the money to do something to Wells Fargo? But I will agree, something needs to be done. And what I'd like to see, Jeff, and I think it was 2 or 3 years ago, I went to Tulsa to cover an ASU basketball game. And they have a brand new, maybe it's not brand new, but maybe a 3 or 4 year facility that seats about 9,000 people. It is really intimate. All the seats are close to the court. That's what I think ASU needs. ASU doesn't need a 14, 15,000 seat facility because they rarely get that many people, maybe once a year for U of A.
Tulsa, I was on that trip, wasn't I?
Yeah, I think you were.
Yeah.
I think a 9,000 seat facility would be perfect for ASU. Make it intimate. So when there are 6,000, 6,500 people in there, it seems crowded, it's noisy, and it's a real home court advantage. And when you bring recruits in, they're not looking at a cavernous place that's half empty.
I would agree with you, and more so than the Galen Center at USC, which, again, for ASU's purposes, might even be too big at 10,000 seats. You look at the kennel up in Spokane. I did a game up there. Gosh, it's been 7 or 8 years ago. But I was just blown away with that building. It seats 7,000. They've got maybe four suites, and they have patios in the corner. And the really big boosters get them, and everybody's right on top of you. And it was a women's game. They did draw about 3,000. But they were all literally right on my shoulders that night. And I thought, that's the kind of building ASU needs.
Absolutely. I think like 9,509 would be a perfect size for ASU. Have some suites. I don't know how many you would have, just for the, you know, the big ticket people, you know, so they feel like they want to sit where they want to sit. Have 9,500, and again, that'd be the perfect size for ASU. It would create such a demand for tickets and big games and what, you know, that's what you want as a university. And the problem is, you stand to do that, you'll probably have to tear down Wells Fargo and start over. I'm not sure you can do that with Wells Fargo. You know, maybe you have to build it somewhere else and turn Wells Fargo into a parking lot. I'm not sure how that would work. The problem is, again, you're talking a couple $100 million, and where does that money come from?
Well, you also have to, and just one little side note, and it's not that much of an issue. If they're going to tear it down and start over, they got to go someplace else for a year, and the logical answer would be U.S. Airways Center.
Right.
But they're going to have to come up with the money to rent the building, and it's not going to be cheap.
No, but, I mean, if you've committed to spending, let's say a new facility is going to cost you $250 million. I have no idea what a new basketball facility would cost. Let's say it's $250 million. If you're willing to spend that, you'll pay whatever rental fee you have to need for U.S. Airways Center.
Yeah. You know what else? Another building that is a prototype for what ASU wants or should have, Washington's Arena.
Yeah.
Fabulous. It's got a nice combination of the old Heck Edmondson Pavilion, but they've upgraded it. They've got a corporate sponsor, and I think it seats 9,000 tops.
Well, isn't it funny, Jeff, that Cameron Indoor, which was for Duke basketball, which was built how many years ago?
Yeah.
It is now kind of the model for what people want their stadium, their arena to be.
Yeah.
Small, noisy, intimate, you know, crowded, a home court advantage. You know, the Dean Dome, which they built for North Carolina, is great. That's not the way most schools are.
No, and you can do it in North Carolina because you can fill the seats. It's the same thing at Arizona. You can have a 13,000-seat arena at Arizona because you can sell all the seats.
It's the only game in town, and not a pro market, by the way.
And that's true as well. While I got you, another thing that we talk about is a lot lately is the ASU baseball coaching search, so I'm going to ask it. What are you hearing?
I'm hearing, actually, that there are a bunch of former ASU players that are making a big push for Pat Murphy to be rehired, which would be an amazing story. I don't know if it's ever going to happen. I have difficulty seeing Michael Crow rehiring a guy who got ASU put on probation. That just doesn't seem like Michael Crow. But I do know there are some very well-known players, Andre Easier, Dustin Pedroia, and others that are pushing hard for Murphy to be rehired. And look, and they have a stick they can use. They can say, we're not going to give you money unless you rehire Murphy. I'm not saying they're saying that, Jeff. But that's a stick they can use if they want. Look, I've always liked that movie. I thought he's one of the most interesting characters I've ever met in my entire life. And he and I, we had our issues, and we also got along well. He obviously was very successful at ASU. I just can't see ASU making that move. Look, you know what I wrote, and this is something that you and I have talked about. I think John Savage at UCLA would be the home run hire. But he's making over $1 million a year with all the programs, and it just doesn't seem like ASU is going to want to spend that kind of money. It very much seems like they're going to go for a younger coach at a smaller school where this would be a step up and somewhere he could stay for 20 years. So that, you know, that I think that's where they're going. I think Murphy back at ASU would be absolutely fascinating.
It would be on a lot of levels.
I think it'd be one of the most interesting stories in Arizona sports in the last 20 years.
It would be on a lot of levels, and you're right. I've heard that same chatter, too, that there are a number of Murphy's former players who just closed their checkbooks as soon as he was let go, haven't reopened them since, and have said in the last couple of weeks, you bring Murph back, our checkbooks reopen.
Right.
And I've always said, look, money talks. You know, I mean, it's – and I love Pat, too. I've always gotten along very well with him. He's somebody that I have a very strong personal attachment to, and – wish nothing but the best for. It is a huge hurdle to jump because Michael Crow would have to get up and say, okay, well, we're going to look past the other stuff. In 30 seconds to wrap it up, I keep getting struck by the fact that when they interviewed the coach at College of Charleston, they said he's a dynamic recruiter. And I thought, boy, I never thought I'd live to see the day that Arizona State had to go hire a dynamic recruiter for baseball?
Well, it's not. This isn't the 70s or 80s where ASU just got whoever they wanted. I mean, college baseball has changed. There's a lot more parity and a lot more schools, especially in the West Coast, that are strong in baseball. You know, the Oregon schools weren't strong back then. They are now. You look at schools like Cal Poly and others that are strong. ASU just can't say, we're ASU, come here, and they'll come. So ASU has to recruit. And, you know, as much as I like Tim Esme, and I think he did a solid job at ASU, I'm not sure he was, quote, that dynamic recruiter. And I think that's what they're looking for, because they understand that ASU just can't, you know, put out the maroon and gold flag and say, we're ASU, we're going to get the best players.
Always enjoy talking to you, Scott. Am I going to see you at the ballpark today?
I will be. I won't be out there today, but I'll be out there tomorrow. Probably my last time this summer, though, Jeff. So
really, well, that's right. Because before you know it, high schools are going to get cranked up again.
No, I got back surgery July 3rd.
Oh, that's right. Well, good luck with that. Good luck with that.
I won't be anywhere. I'll be watching you. I'll be listening to you every night.
Okay. Yeah. If you're watching me, you're doing something magical, because at those games, I'm not. They don't put me on camera.
Well, I'll make sure I listen.
Thank you very much. Good to talk to you, pal.
You too.
Scott Bordeaux, azcentral.com. Always a great read, always a great listen when he talks about sports or anything else for that matter, and we do wish him the best. I've forgotten the fact he is going to have back surgery. Keep our fingers crossed that everything goes well. When we come back, they've given me an open segment, Run for Your Lives. I do have some things I want to talk about. I'd like to speak to baristas at Starbucks. So if you're a barista at Starbucks, stick around. I am a stockholder. You need to listen to me. And we're back in a few minutes.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center, available 24/7, 365 at sports360az.com.
Land of Goshen, that's different rejoin music. Wow.
Jared Nielsen likes to keep us on our toes.
Yeah, I was going to say, Jared, that's pretty wild stuff. I heard a song the other day. This is Jeff Munn from the Diamondbacks for Brad, and we're on sports360az.com. That's why you see that sports360az thing in the corner there. And on azcentral.com, and we're glad to have you with us on a Friday. That reminds me, songs that get in your head. I'm at an age now where there are songs from the 70s and 80s that I liked when they were out and they were on the charts, and I've forgotten about them completely. I'm going to try to tie the story together as quick as I can. In just thinking about Casey Kasem, who died on Sunday, I get home Sunday evening and I'm sitting at my computer and I get on YouTube and I just thought, well, you know, I'd like to hear the show. Sirius XM reran a bunch of his old American Top 40 shows. And I don't like listening to the viral video of him flipping out at a producer. That's so sophomoric. But I listened, they have put up the audio tracks of a lot of his shows. And as he's coming out of a song, you hear the song. And I heard a song I haven't heard in ages, and I can't get it out of my head now. It's by Boz Scaggs called Miss Sun. Hey, Miss Sun, what can I say? I tried to hold you, but the moon got in the way. And I heard that, and I was like, gosh, I haven't heard that song in ages, and now I can't get it out of my head. And as I'm driving here today, I see that, what is that in the background? What is that? What background did you put up there? I can't figure that out.
Is it downtown Phoenix?
No, it's downtown Phoenix. Okay, thank you.
You've been down there in a while?
Just for work.
You don't pay attention to where you're going?
I sneak in. You know what? We have a place that we park underneath the 7th Street Bridge, so I don't see that much of downtown. But anyway, I heard the song, and I'm driving up here today, and I see Boz Scaggs is going to be at Talking Stick. I mean, it's amazing. It's like Boz Scaggs at Talking Stick. Wow. And I'm working that night, so I don't know why I'm worried about it. I can't go. All right. This morning, I have a very nasty little habit. Well, it's not nasty. I drink a lot of Starbucks. And I've done the show here occasionally. See today that I have a Styrofoam cup. And now you're about to find out why it's not the Starbucks cup I usually have. I'm in the drive-thru at my neighborhood Starbucks. The only thing I ever order there is a venti pike place. I'm just like my dad. My dad told me he used to grill steaks for me when I was a teenager, and the first thing I'd go for is a ketchup bottle. And he'd want to strangle me. And now I understand what he was getting at. Because I'll take my son to a steak restaurant. He'll order a steak. And he starts asking for A1 or ketchup, and it's like, come on, what are you doing? Anyway, most everything I order just plain. Steaks, hamburgers, drives people nuts. And coffee. I don't put anything in coffee. So I get a Venti Pike Place at Starbucks. I'm in the drive-thru. I pull up. The barista hands me a Venti cup. I'm pretty much got a lot of faith in this person that she's put coffee in it. And she says, oh, you don't have to pay for this. The woman ahead of you paid for your drink. And at first I tried to pump up my ego and think, wow, she must have seen me in the rearview mirror. And then I said, so I asked why. And she said, oh, no particular reason. She just wanted to pay it forward. So I'm getting a text message about ketchup on steak. And so I thought, yeah, that's terrific. You know, pay it forward. Isn't that wonderful? And I was like, well, great. So I get down here. I take the spill stick. I always have to spill stick because I'm messy. Take a sip, and I realize immediately this is not Pike Place coffee. I looked at the label on the cup, and it says Venti Hazelnut Macchiato with soy. I'm thinking, listen, that's terrific. You know, I want to thank the person who did buy the drink for me, but please give me the right drink.
What you didn't know is that person was actually buying me a drink and wanted you to bring
yeah.
it to me.
Is that the kind of Hazelnut Macchiato?
I'm the wimpiest coffee drinker of all time, but whatever gets me that little caffeine boost, I'll drink it. But I can't do it black like you do. I need cheese on my burger. And sometimes I'll do the occasional A1 on my steak, but it's rare because normally okay. I like the natural stuff out of it like you do, but definitely not ketchup.
If I make a steak at home, if I grill a steak, I will put A1 on it. And that's nothing against our fine supermarkets here in Phoenix. But when I go to a prime steakhouse, and I'm not mentioning names because you guys don't sponsor the show, and if you want your name mentioned, you have to sponsor the show. Gateway Airport, Santan Ford. See what I'm doing here? They're sponsors. If I go to a prime steakhouse, I'm not stupid enough to ask for steak sauce for two reasons. One, you don't need to do it. The steak is fine by itself. And secondly, they will throw things at you if you ask for sauce. And the chef will come out and have words with you if you do that. And I've tried to explain that. The other thing that was fun about taking my son to a steakhouse, this one I will mention because I do work with them, Shula's Steakhouse. You ever been out to Shula's?
I haven't, actually. I have not.
Oh. If you're not a football fan, it's not totally offensive to non-football fans. But they do a thing where the menu is on a football. You know, Don Shula, the whole thing. I took my son there. I do a lot of work with Gila River Casinos because they're one of our sponsors at the D-backs, and I love those people. And they take very good care of me, and one of the things they do for me is every once in a while they'll send me out to Shula's for a night. I took my son, and poor kid, I'm embarrassing him on a radio show. He's 16 years old at the time, and he loves that I take him to another place in Scottsdale. Okay, here I am mentioning names again because he's a friend of mine, Don and Charlie's. And I take him there because he loves the ribs. I love all the food at Don and Charlie.
Love the ribs at Don and Charlie. Oh.
So we go to Shula's, and he's looking at the menu, and he sees this thing called prime rib. And he thinks, oh, they're going to bring out ribs. And he orders, you know, and they, you know, the waiter said to him, what cut, you know, what kind of house big? And he says, give me the biggest order you can. And he brings out this gargantuan slice of prime rib, and my son looks at me and goes, what's this? I said, it's prime rib. And he finished maybe one quarter of it. It's just like, well, thanks a lot.
He gave it an effort. Well, I, for one hand, would have downed that whole thing if someone hands
me a
thing
of prime
rib. You
mean both, cowboy. And I'm at an age where I really shouldn't do that anymore. But, yeah, those things always just kind of confuse me when I see that. Have you had the D-Bat dog?
Not yet, and I'm planning on having that here in the next month or so.
Are you really? Somebody should bring one down here for Brad, too. I saw they...
No, bring it for me. Don't bring it for Brad.
Well, that's true. By the way, is Brad Johnny Carson? Does he ever do this show anymore?
He does. He's just enjoying a little Brad time this week.
Yeah. Yeah, he's worse than, you know, when he does do the show, I keep waiting for him to say, Doc is here tonight. Ed is off giving away money from Publishers Clearinghouse.
That's good. That was good.
Oh, I can do better than that. I'm, you know, There was one night Carson came out and he said, you can keep applauding. It's a free country. You're allowed to worship. People don't talk about that. Anyway, I'm getting off on another tangent, and I know that we're coming up on a break soon. But I was just wondering about that the other day. Mark Asher did this show yesterday. It's great that Mark is back doing talk shows again. But I started thinking to myself, does Brad ever do his own show? Do I have to see pictures of him fly fishing with Todd Graham? Seriously. Is that because – is the White Mountain steak fry this weekend?
It's tomorrow, so he's up
and
there.
That's another thing. You don't fry steaks anymore. You know what happens when you fry a steak?
It turns out like coal.
Fried steak.
That's true. You don't do
fried steaks anymore.
It's funny you say that because I thought that exact thing 2 years ago when I went up there for the first time. I was like, who fries steaks anymore?
You grill steaks.
Exactly.
If you fry a steak, you get fried steak. You don't fry a steak.
They do in Pine Top, I guess.
Well, they can do a lot of things in Pine Top because it's only 83 degrees up there.
Absolutely.
Right now.
They can do anything.
Yeah, pretty much. Play golf, fry steaks. We have to take a break because this is getting way off the tracks. And we're going to stay in this direction because Bill Gutekunst and I are going to talk movies. What is Clint Eastwood doing directing a movie about 60s singers in New Jersey? What in the world has Clint Eastwood done with his career? And we'll have a little leftover business about Father's Day. There's a famous TV dad, or he was, never gets talked about anymore. We'll talk about that in a few minutes on the Brad Sesmatt Show. Doc is here. Ed's off. We're back after this. Here comes that thing that says more to come. Yes, indeed. That song means one of two things. Either Brad's ego is run amok, or it's time for Bill Gutekunst. I'm making fun of Brad because he's not here. Bill Gutekunst, chief film critic for AZ Central and Gannett, joins us as he does every Friday. We're going to talk movies, but I'm also going to ask him about... You were on last Friday with Brad. Did he talk at all about TV dads?
He did not.
Okay, then we're going to do it. But I want to get you the big movie coming out, and I guess the premiere is today in a general sense. It's hard to know when movies premiere anymore because they do the premiere in Hollywood, and they do kind of a sneak preview. But I guess today is the official premiere of Jersey Boys?
It opens today. You're safe saying that. The premiere, I'm sure.
It opens today.
The premiere is in Hollywood, and probably there's probably one in New York. And now what they do, especially with the big action films, is they have premieres all over the world. They have them in Japan. They'll have them all over the place.
How I know that I've read some of the reviews on Jersey Boys, and they're not all, you know, raving
no.
about this movie. And it brings up a first question I want to ask you as a critic. How good a director is Clint Eastwood?
He can be very good. He is good. There are things, some people think that his movies are kind of what you would think of as like airless, just kind of flat. And I don't think he's on an especially big hot streak right now. What he's famous for is using very few takes. Actors really like working with him because he just kind of goes in there and they'll do a couple takes and they're done. And then you got, I guess this is really true. Like if you think of a movie like The Shining that Stanley Kubrick directed, I guess he had Jack Nicholson for one scene just walk across a street 36 times.
Oh.
And Nicholson, for all his wild behavior and all that stuff, is supposedly just the consummate pro on set. Never misbehaves, never does anything. Works as hard as he can with the director. Great, great actor, great hard worker. And I think, the story is that even he was getting pissed. He was like, "Look, I'm walking across the street here. How many times do you want me to do this?" So they like working with Eastwood. I think he's good with a lot of things. I mean, a movie like Gran Torino, where he is in it, and he's like a crotchety old guy who sort of becomes almost a vigilante type. Something like that's good. Or even another musical. A lot of people ask me, why is Clint Eastwood directing this movie? And it's like, well, one thing, Clint Eastwood is a musician himself. He's a jazz pianist. He loves music. He made a great movie about music, A Bird, which is the story of Charlie Parker. But that's a pretty dark story.
That.
I mean, Charlie Parker's a heroin addict, but he's also a genius musician. And he's done things that you wouldn't think that he did. He did a really good job directing The Bridges of Madison County, which is probably the last movie you would think of Clint Eastwood directing. But, he did it. Meryl Streep loved working with him, and all that. But the thing about this is the Four Seasons, there are a couple things. One is they were hugely popular. They've sold 150 million records or something. I mean, they were popular. This movie makes it out like they're the Beatles or something, and that was not the case. But they were popular. But their story is interesting. They had, you know, real mob ties and stuff. And it's not tough enough. I mean, but granted, it's based on the musical, so you're not going to, you know, as I said in my review, I think, you know, you're not going to get Goodfellas set to music. But,
well, and we should mention also that the stage production of Jersey Boys is coming to Gamage sometime this summer.
Yes, in July. Yeah.
That was my problem with. I'm not going to go see this movie, partially because I don't go see movies, period. That would rule it out. It's a movie, so I'm out of there. And the other thing, and we're showing a trailer for Jersey Boys. It's got Christopher Walken in it. And I'm okay with Christopher Walken, but he doesn't need to be in every movie. Just get Christopher Walken out of these movies. I'm tired of looking at him.
Well, he is too interesting. You brought that up because he is an example of what's wrong with this movie. You know, maybe he's in too much, but he's a really good actor, and he. In this, he's just like toothless. He's a mobster, and he's just kind of like this nice old, you know, almost like an uncle or something to these guys. And maybe that's how it was. I don't know. But I don't know. And I met Christopher Walken at the Toronto Film Festival. I was interviewing him with Catherine Keener, who they were in this movie, and she's in a ton of independent films. And it ended up with me just kind of watching the two of them talk, which was sort of interesting. And he said something about, you know, he said he's a good actor because he can't remember anything. And he just forgets whatever the last role was. And she was like, I don't believe that. I don't think that's true. You can't be an actor and not remember anything. He's like, no. He said, I do the one in front of me, and then I go, I don't care. I don't remember any of that stuff.
And yet, every time I see him, all I can think of is, I got a fever. I've got about 3 minutes. I wanted to get this in. There was a lot of talk last weekend with Father's Day about great TV dads, and I don't expect most people to remember this, but you can go to YouTube and see the first two or three seasons of My Three Sons. And for my money, Fred McMurray as Steve Douglas, especially in the first two or three years of that show, was the prototypical TV dad. And it was one of those classic sitcoms, a widower trying to raise three boys, and his father-in-law comes to live with him to kind of be the housekeeper. And there's other backstories within the industry about the show that Fred McMurray cut a deal where he could shoot all his scenes all at once, and the rest of the cast did their stuff after he was finished. But the other thing that fascinates me about his portrayal of that TV dad was, for the most part, he was a great movie actor, and he did a movie right before My Three Sons called Good Day for a Hanging, in which he plays a sheriff with a little bit of a chip on his shoulder, and he's looking to just shoot or hang everybody he can get his hands on. And you watch that movie, and you think, there's no way that he morphs from this into America's TV dad. But I never hear him mentioned his
movies
character.
Like Double Indemnity. I mean, he's great at being, you know, the shady kind of person. That's interesting, and that's true. I mean, I think that you get caught up in. I always thought he seemed kind of like he had a chip on his shoulder in My Three Sons.
No, not at all, not to me.
But not compared, certainly, to Uncle Charlie.
or Bub.
You think about Uncle Charlie, that's got to be one of the TV's all-time great haircuts. But the
it wasn't good.
But I think you're right. I think it is. The show is probably overlooked too, and but I think that people. You know, serious film people or whatever you want to call them, they probably think of him first as a movie actor. And a lot of this is no longer the case with the rise of HBO and cable and stuff, but it used to be. You know, there was a real division between movies and TV.
Oh, yeah.
And if you did TV, that was somehow thought of as lesser. And I mean, nobody's going to think less about it now that they, you know, that arguably some of the best TV is better than what's on at the theaters, but I don't know.
I would agree.
You got to understand, as you hear my accent, that for me, the best TV dad begins and ends with Andy Griffith.
I agree. You're right, and we'll have to say that argument for another time where you can hear the music. We're up against it. Thanks, Bill.
Thank you.
Bill Goodykunz, azcentral.com. It's Friday. I hope you got a nice weekend planned. This is the Brad Sesmatch Show. Don't go anywhere.